fictional friends, and welcome to another episode of Fully Booked. I'm Megan.
And I'm Shireen.
And it is officially April.
April! You love
better,
it when I
It was
do
better
that.
Than March. It's got several syllables. It's better than March.
March was like, March!
Very anticlimactic. Yeah. It just doesn't have, it doesn't quite have that no. je ne sais quoi that you're looking for, you know? Anyway, it's officially the month of April, which obviously, as usual over here, means that we need a new theme because it's the beginning of a new month.
Yay!
So for the month of April, we're going to be talking about and covering everything Americana. For anybody who's like, what the fuck is that?
Good question.
No,
really.
But it's true.
And like, that's what we're getting into this month.
Yeah, that's it. We're going to be talking about it. Basically, okay, so Merriam-Webster, I'm just going to give everybody like a really vague definition. The definition that's up basically on Merriam-Webster's website is materials concerning or characteristic of America, its civilization, or its culture. Mm. So obviously that's a really broad kind of overview, but yep. I feel like Americana in general, whether you're talking about film or books or music or anything in that, or even just like general, like sort of sociocultural thing.
Yeah, like when you say Americana, like I think of like cars, like, you know, OG cars.
I think of really particular types
and
of
roll,
music,
like country music.
Country music and like bluegrass and
yeah.
blues and things like that.
Yeah.
I think of a lot of things like along those lines. And I think of, I don't know, like older style, almost like dusty American highways,
yes.
like, you know, like mm-hmm. the really long ones that run through several states and things like
yes,
that,
totally.
Like a Route 66 type of thing, like very ingrained within the culture. And there are also a lot of, you know, practices, like, you know, sort of like traditions and things like that, that you probably won't find in any other part of the world, for
right.
instance. Like, those things are always very, like, Americana.
Yeah, you think, you know? Old Hollywood, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can see, like, the darker kind of aspects of it, but also the glitz and glam aspect of it, too. Just these things that you won't find in any other place in the world.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But given that broad definition, of course, to your point, the cultural aspects
of it,
anything
if that makes sense.
To
yeah.
do with their history,
yes.
with their, you know, culture.
Yes, exactly.
Which then covers a broad spectrum.
Of
anything,
yes.
really.
And I think that as we kind of progress through the month of April and we talk about a couple of movies, I find our choices of film are pretty interesting. They're very different from one another.
They're also good this
They're
month.
Very good. They're both good. yes, this is true. We don't have to get too upset this month about it. So if anybody hates when we talk about really bad movies, you're welcome. I don't know. so yeah, and I think that even just like based on our topics and based on our films, which like I said, these are two vastly different movies that I think fall into the category of Americana, but in very different ways.
Yes.
It kind of, I think you'll get a bit of a better idea of like how broad the definition kind of is. And maybe we'll narrow things down a little bit more as we go.
Yep.
But just to, you know, sort
also,
of.
Also, we're Canadian.
Yes.
So we really apologize if we're getting this wrong.
Yeah. Like, look, I wouldn't necessarily say that we have like the most knowledge with regards to this kind of a theme, but it is something like, you know, no matter what or how you feel about things in general, like America is one of like the biggest, most well-known countries in the world.
You think of the American dream, right? You
yeah.
think of what it represents. It represents the possibility of making something.
Achieving success.
Of yourself.
You know, that's
yeah.
it in your personal life and your like work life, all those kinds
White
of things.
Picket fence.
Yeah, that's it. All that kind of stuff. And I do think that the American dream has shifted quite a bit in more recent times, obviously. But yeah, the more classic interpretation of it is definitely that. So that's just to give kind of an overview, a little bit of kind of what we'll be talking about a little bit throughout the course of the month. But to kick everything off, we decided to take a look at like a more recent film adaptation. So I'll just give like a spoiler alert ahead of time if you happen to have not seen it or you're not aware of the story, just be aware of that. We're going to be talking through the film, so there you go. But this month we are talking about the 2023 adaptation of The Color Purple.
You must ain't got no kinfolk around these parts.
All I had was my sister. She was the only one ever loved me.
I'm gonna hold my head up. I'm gonna put my shoulders back.
It's time for you to see the world.
There's gonna be some changes made.
Put it on. This ain't me.
Hush.
We need to look like we belong.
See the smile and color.
So if you've never heard of this story at all, it's based on the original novel written by an author by the name of Alice Walker, which I believe was published in 1982, originally made into a film in 1985 initially, and also this is the second film adaptation, but this adaptation is also confusing. It's also an adaptation of the stage musical that was made post-film, basically. So the film came out in 1985, and then after that, there was a stage musical that was produced. This is based on the stage musical, while also technically being based on, like, the novel and the original story as well. Confusing, but there you go. That's basically what it is. It is obviously, yes, this is a film, but it's a musical. Mm-hmm. So just be aware of that if you're going to go into it, if you hate musicals or something. Although, honestly, this one's really good. So.
It is. I mean, to be fair, we didn't watch this together, but I was texting Megan going, oh, this is a whole ass musical.
Yeah,
oh,
Shereen went in totally blind.
I had no idea what this was about.
I've seen the original film, so I knew, like, what the story was and everything. No, I've never seen the musical adaptation of it, so this was, like, a new version of it for me. But outside of that, yeah, I knew what the original story basically was.
I did not, shockingly. Obviously, you've seen the title when you go into a bookstore, but never watched the movie. I don't know how this happened. Had no idea what the story was about, so I went in completely blind and was, like, by the end sobbing. Yeah. Like, I'm like, what is this movie?
Yeah, it can be a really pleasant surprise. Even if you're, like, sad or, like, you have, like, an emotional reaction to it, I find it's fun sometimes.
It was wonderful.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's fun sometimes to go into something with no real working knowledge of a story, just because you can just be really pleasantly surprised by something, by, like, a story when you're watching a film, so that's kind of fun. So The Color Purple right now, as we're recording, is sitting at a 7.10 out of 7 out of 10, sorry, out on IMDb, and 82% on Rotten Tomatoes right now.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I'd give it, like, a little bit more. I can understand that. Don't get me wrong, it's long.
It is long. It does. I had to, like, I fast forwarded through some of the
stuff. Yeah, like, you do, like, don't get me wrong, like, you do have to be kind of committed to watching the whole thing. It's not that it really drags at any point, because all aspects of the story are important.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely after a while, you're like, wow, okay, this is a long film, and it is.
Yeah. And very detailed.
Very detailed. There's a lot that goes into it. So the film, the story kicks off in 1909. The film takes place in Georgia. So deep south, and a lot of that at that time and now as well, there are a lot of people of color who live in the southern part of the United States. That's just what it is. Mm-hmm. In 1909, there are two teenage sisters named Celie and Nettie Harris, I believe. Is that their last name? Yeah. So they live in a remote part of Georgia with their shitty, shitty father, who's horrible and abusive and disgusting. Mm-hmm.
Celie is pregnant.
Yes, Celie is pregnant at the time that the story begins. I'm going to give a few trigger warnings, I think, for this movie in general and the story in general. So trigger warning for abuse and, like, domestic violence throughout the course of the story. Trigger warning for sexual assault, incest. Well, incest, but not really. It's not confusing, actually. But I'll explain when we get there. But the impression that we're given at the beginning of the story, nevertheless, and just, like, that's it. So a lot of things like that. Substance abuse, there are a lot of aspects of the story that are quite difficult, and you're like, is this a musical? And it is, and it still pulls it off anyway, despite like the very heavy topics.
Very much.
It still does a good job of it. So Celie and Nettie are teenagers. Celie's pregnant at the beginning of the story. We are given to understand very quickly that this is her second pregnancy, unfortunately, at the hands of her father. Ugh. Gross.
And both times he takes the babies away from her.
Yeah. Obviously, they dream of getting away. So their mom passed away several years earlier, and we're given to understand that after she died, their father started sexually abusing her. Yep. And so this has resulted in two pregnancies. She gives birth to her second, who's a boy. She's already had a girl. She gives birth to her second right at the beginning of the film. She names him Adam. And I believe the little girl's name is Olivia.
Olivia.
Yeah. So he takes the the children away. And we don't know what happens to them until like a little bit later on into the story. At the same time, so they have to work in the family shop that they own, that they believe that their father owns, which is like a
general store.
A general store, yeah, yeah. Like a grocery general store type of situation. Celie has to work all day, I guess partially because she's pregnant as well. I'm sure that was his excuse. Nettie's the only one who goes to school of the two of them, and I believe that she's the one who's taught Celie like how to read and write properly.
Yeah, and there's an understanding or an assumption that Nettie is going to school because their dad wants her to become a school teacher and bring in money.
Yeah. To the family in general, and she would still be stuck with them anyway, but that's what it is. Obviously, they want to, you know, they do dream about, like, kind of getting away from everything, particularly Nettie. She's very strong-willed. Mm-hmm. Celie is definitely the more, like, sort of the quieter of the two.
I mean, she's been clearly and been she's abused been, yeah, you can, a lot more yeah, than her sister.
Yes, it's very clear that she's also, I get the feeling, to a degree, kind of quietly taken the brunt of the abuse so that Nettie won't have to deal with it.
Yes, and I think that that's, it's almost like this, like, unspoken transaction between the two of them, where it's like, Nettie will look after Celie in her own way, like, teach her to read, to write, and they have this hope that potentially Nettie could take them away. Mm-hmm. Nettie tries to keep Celie very cheerful. She tries to cheer her up. She tries to show her the positives in life, give her some fun.
Yeah.
But Celie is very she's into herself, you know, just
she's
your typical.
She's been beaten down so much.
Yeah. And, you know, like I was saying to you, you know, initially you think you're led to believe that it's because it's like a lack of intelligence on her part. Mm-hmm. That is not the case.
No, it's not that at all. That's not true at all. It's just a full, like, amount of isolation and sheltering that she's been forced into since she was a small child, is my understanding. We're introduced to a character named Albert Johnson, but we only know him as Mr. for the majority of the story. Mr. takes a liking. He's much older, but he takes a liking to Nettie. However, since their father has ambitions for Nettie to actually work outside of the home, when Mr. approaches him and asks to marry Nettie, he's like, nah, you can have Celie.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really shitty. They call her ugly because she's like the quote-unquote ugly sister of the two. They're really shitty about the way that she looks, which is also not true, but anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just gross. It's just like a really derogatory way of speaking about something. Like, they act like she's a thing and not a person. It's like, it's disgusting.
There's like this really heartbreaking moment where, like, he just walks in, tells her, pack up your things, you're going to marry Mr.
Yeah.
And Mr. is riding on a horse through town.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Celie is following him.
On foot.
On foot. And I think she's barefoot.
I don't remember.
I might be wrong, but anyway, she's on foot, and it's just really heartbreaking.
Yeah, because she's trying to just, like, keep up with him.
Yeah.
He's annoyed because he wanted to marry the other one. He ignores the fact that she exists, but he brings her into the house, which is disgusting. Mr. has a really severe alcohol abuse issue.
We're led to understand that he was married.
Yes, he was, because he has three children.
He's got three children.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And his wife, I believe, has also died.
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken, again, sometime earlier. And he's basically, he doesn't pay attention to his kids. He leaves them to be, like, feral to a degree. They run around and do nothing all day.
Yeah.
So anyway, so he brings Celie in, and she also, as a child herself, I think she's maybe supposed to be like 15 or something, is expected to take care of these three children and run this house properly and clean up.
We're not much younger than her.
No, that's it. Nettie shows up. They go through, like, you know, they live together for a period of time, obviously, like, you know, it was a time where we're talking 1917.
I think so. Yeah.
Was it 1917 by this point? I forget. Or did, I'm sorry. We're still in 1909.
Yeah.
Sorry. No. Okay. So Mr. obviously takes whatever he wants in the marital bed, because of course men at that time would have automatically assumed that they were entitled to do whatever they wanted to their spouse. And marital rape was not a thing that you would think of at that time. It wasn't considered anything that was real.
Mm-hmm.
So, Celie does what she can to run the house and kind of clean up and take care of the kids and cook and do these things. Mr. is physically abusive towards her.
And verbally.
And verbally abusive towards her as well. If he's not ignoring her, he's abusing her. That's pretty much what it is.
Yeah, it's really awful.
It's gross. Yeah, it's
and
horrible.
She just, she turns more and more into herself. So, like, this abused child from the beginning is getting, like, worse and worse. And then her sister shows up.
Yes, because she can confess, she shows up and tells Celie, like, after you left, their dad tried to start molesting her as well. And so she was like, I cannot live there anymore. So Mister's like, fine, whatever. She can live here, but she has to help.
Yeah.
Basically. And I don't want her to, like, eat too much food or do this or do that. And that's pretty much what their agreement is. He's, of course, seems like he's okay, quote unquote, with this at first, but it's really because he wants to have sex with her.
Yeah.
And he tries to one evening, which leads to this really massive confrontation because Nettie's like, absolutely not. No, she rebuffs his advances. And then he kicks her out of the house and tells her to get lost. And her and Celie are separated from each other. And this really, like, really upsetting, like, really sad
scene. And like, you know, their parting words are that, you know, Nettie promises Celie that she will write to her
every day.
Every day.
Yeah.
And that's it. And Celie is then beaten again. Yeah. And then we fast forward into 1917.
Exactly. Yeah, that's it. Thank you. So, yeah, so we get into 1917. Celie's obviously still taking care of everything around the house. And Mister, by the way, Mister's a farmer, just for, it comes up in several scenes.
I think they mention at some point, because they keep showing the image of the house. And at first I was like shocked because it's clearly like a plantation or of some sort, or it looks like one of these like houses.
There's a conversation that happens between him and his father.
And his father mentions that, like, he took the house back. And it
your grandfather slaved on this land or something.
Exactly. Like, it was, like, the land where their ancestors were slaves or something.
Yeah.
And so it does really have that look about it. And so he's, like, he owns the land. He's a farmer on the land.
Yeah.
And they've got quite, like, a big plot of land with a swamp
It goes all the way down to the water and everything. Yeah, no, it's impressively big. Honestly, it's quite large. So in 1917, that's it. Celie's still dealing, unfortunately, with abuse and with having to run the house. Mister's oldest son, named Harpo, is getting married to this woman named Sophia. Sophia is a fucking icon. She is very much not a woman of that period. And what I mean by that is that she's incredibly strong-willed. She is brash. She is outspoken. She's loud about any opinion that she has about things.
She does not give a crap what men think of her.
She doesn't care what people think of her.
She doesn't care what the norms are or the expectations are of her as a woman. She does not care.
No, she does not at all. She does what she wants when she wants, basically. Yeah. And Harpo is like head over fucking heels for her.
Oh, he loves her.
He's obsessed with her. It's really funny. So, you know, at first, like, Mister's like, oh my God, you're not marrying this woman. Like, she's ridiculous.
Because she's pregnant.
Yes, because she's pregnant. And of course, you know, like, he does the whole, like, oh, how do you know it's his baby kind of thing. And she's like, okay, shut up. He's the only person I'm having sex with. It's definitely his baby.
Yeah.
They do get married.
They do. And Harpo builds a house for them on the plot of land that was given to him by his grandfather.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So he builds a house for them and is like, Dad, I don't care what you say. We're getting married. I'm in love with her. That's what it is.
And they do. And she has the
baby.
And
she has her baby.
And they live in domestic bliss for a hot minute.
Yeah. And her and Celie do form a friendship as well.
But Celie's looking at this dynamic of, like, you know, Harpo, who, you know, like, Sophia says to Harpo when Celie goes over, make us tea and, you know, tend to the baby.
Yeah.
And he's like, how am I supposed to do that? And she goes, I don't know. You figure it out. So like, Celie is looking at this and she doesn't
understand it because she's never seen a relationship like this before. So when Harpo comes to her with, like, you know, sort of like his concerns where he's like, I can't control her. Like, I don't know what to do.
And she doesn't tend to me the way you tend
to. No, that's it. You know, and so unfortunately, Celie, again, in like a level of naivete that the character maintains throughout most of the course of the story, like almost the entire film, basically, in that naivete and, like, not that it's a great thing, but she's kind of like, I don't know, maybe you should hit her, basically.
You should beat her.
Yeah, because she's like, you know, my husband beats me and I definitely do everything that he wants me to do.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, God, it's so good.
He tries, I guess, one time to do this. To hit her, and you better believe that she turns around and kicks the shit out of him.
Oh, yeah,
it's right great. Back. It's really great. And again, because Sophia is a very strong-willed woman, she's like, she understands, like, where he came to this sort of idea from, like, where this came from based on obviously his dad and Celie and all of this stuff. And, you know, she says, she's like, still really, I really love him. Like, I really love him. He's basically the love of my life. But she's like, no one hits me ever. So she leaves with the baby. She leaves him.
And she does confront Seeley. She says, why did you tell him to hit me? And Seeley, you know, what I always find really interesting about Seeley is that throughout, she's very naive. She's very, like, you know, product of her abuse. But she's also very emotionally intelligent. So she's able to understand the reason why she does a lot of things. And so her immediate answer is, because I'm jealous of you.
Yes. And she's like, I'm jealous of, like, what you're able to do, kind of thing, and, like, how you carry yourself and all of those things. And she's really, she is. She's just jealous of it. And that's what she admits. So she, Sophia leaves for a period of time. And then when we, you know, sort of our next kind of scene basically is, everybody starts this whole, there's a whole song, a literal song and dance, obviously, it's a musical, about a woman named Shug Avery
who's
coming to town. And so Shug is a, like a jazz singer, like a famous jazz singer in the area.
Did she say jazz or blues?
I think it's jazz.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. So she's like a famous jazz singer in the area who travels around to different parts of, I think, mostly
South.
Like the South in general, but like, you know, Georgia and stuff. She goes to Tennessee at one point, Mississippi, like different places. She comes back to town. Actually, her parents are the town's reverend and his wife. And she's obviously like,
she's like the town pride.
And they, but those, they don't really like pay her. Like, they try to ignore it because they think that she's like, you know, like a harlot and she's gone off and done all of these things that she shouldn't be doing. So,
she's,
you know,
not a woman of God anymore.
Yeah. She's a loose woman basically. Yeah. And, you know, everybody's like, oh, a loose woman. But it's so funny because of course she's, very sexually free, which again, at the time, you know, would have been something that would have been viewed negatively in a lot of ways. But because of that, all the men want her and all the women hate her and she's hot. So
to boot.
Yeah. So that, you know, helps. So she's played by Taraji P. Henson, actually, who, by the way, hasn't aged in like the last 15 years. I don't understand.
Oh, she looks awesome.
She's 53 years old.
She does not look 53.
I know.
She looks like she's like 37.
I thought she was like in her late 30s.
Yeah.
Anyway. So she comes to town to perform. Since Sophia and Harpo have split up, he's turned the house that he had built out near the water into a juke joint. So like a little club bar situation. And he's dating this girl named Mary Agnes, but everybody calls her Squeak.
Yeah,
because
she's a singer.
She's demure and small, and I think she doesn't say very much all the time. So, yeah. And she's played by an R&B singer, something, H-E-R. Yeah. How do you... Guys, I'm sorry. I don't know which one it
is. Not that cool.
Yeah, I don't know. But anyway, that's who she's played by. So, you know, Shug goes to sing, that Harpo asks her, like, you know, can you sing? And he's like, and, you know, Squeak's trying to be like, I sing too. Like, you know, I'm bringing in money. I'm doing this and doing that. But of course, Shug Avery is very well known. So she brings like a ton of people into the place. On that evening, Sophia shows up with her new husband. What's his name?
I feel like it starts with a B.
Yeah. I forget. Whatever. It's fine.
But don't, like, also before all this, because this is the opening night of this club, and, you know, they're kind of posting all the posters all over the place because Shug is going to be singing. Seeley and Shug have kind of struck up this friendship.
Yes, because Shug used to have like a whole thing going on with Mister, and she still kind of does.
But I think she doesn't. Like, I think Shug knows who Mister is, and she's not that interested in him, like, other than, like, physical stuff.
Yeah, just from time to time to somebody to, like, keep your bed warm type of thing is
more
her vibe.
But he's, like, full on, like,
oh, he's
in
obsessed
love
with her.
With
her. Yeah, like, no, he's, like, obsessed with her, for sure, because he's obsessed with the idea of being able to land, like, a woman like her, basically, you know? That's really what he's into, and he has disagreements with his father about this as well.
Yeah, and I believe, and I'm not sure, it kind of seems like his dad didn't want them to be together.
No, I don't think so.
And maybe put the kibosh on it
when
they were young.
Yeah.
And it seems like, you know, Mister and his dad are always arguing.
Yeah,
over
they
this.
Don't. They have a very terrible, very tenuous relationship. So she, you know, that's it, sings at the club. Sophia and her new husband are there. A fight breaks out because Harpo asks Sophia to dance, and then Squeak tries to cut in, and it turns into into a literal wall. It's insane. And the whole place goes crazy. And, you know, and Suge's like, time to go. Yeah. And she just pieces out and Celie wants to go with her. And she's like, no, I can't right now. Like next time. And Suge's dealing with her own kinds of things as well with not having her parents' acceptance. And also she has a lot of like alcohol abuse issues as well for quite a while throughout the story. So, you know, she's like, please, please, please kind of like, you know, like come with, like, I want to go with you and all that kind of stuff. And see, and you know, Suge's like, no, I don't think we're going to be able to do that this time. But when all of this is going on that evening, or not long after anyway, they, while Mr. is passed out at the bar, like his son's bar, the mailman shows up and Celie had never been able to pick up any of the mail because she's always waiting for letters from Nettie, always. And Mr. would never let her take the mail. He would always rush over and get the mail from the mailman. Yeah, I know, he's a piece of shit.
Like, it's like you abuse her. You don't really seem to like her all that much. Like, why keep her letters?
I don't know why. Yeah, like, why, God, why put in so much effort? Yeah. Anyway, so, anyway, but in the morning, he's passed out at the bar and Suge runs into the mailman and takes the mail for from him. And then she looks down and sees, oh, look, a letter from Nettie for Celie, and runs upstairs.
Yeah. I think she's mentioned to Suge that like she's got a sister and she's got two kids. Like she's always talking about her sister and her two children and how much she loves them and how
that she has no one now.
She has no one now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because anybody that she did have was taken away from her.
Yeah.
And so of course when this happens, Suge's also like, hey, there must be more letters here. I'm sure that there are because they read one of the letters and it's they do find like a whole giant pile of them, and it's revealed that yes, Nettie has been writing, I believe, every week since she left.
Yes,
she's been sending her letters,
and she says in her letter, like, I guess he's still keeping the letters away.
Yeah,
from
like
you.
She knows, like she's aware, obviously, because she knew what he was like. So she basically, we learn a lot through the course of the letters, was that after Nettie was kicked out of the farmhouse and she left, she wound up in town and she wound up working for a, getting a job with like a local reverend and his wife. And they told her that they were actually heading off to Africa to work as missionaries, to do some missionary work there. And she decided to go with them because turns out this particular reverend and his wife both adopted both of the babies that Celie had. So they have Olivia and Adam. And she's like, okay, I'm going to come and raise my niece and nephew with you, basically. So
it's
she
so
left
nice.
With them.
In that moment, I'm like, oh!
Well, it's really nice because they got to have, like, I'm sure that the reverend and his wife were lovely, but it's nice that they got to have, like, a blood relative with them as well. So that's what she does. So they went off to Africa, and they were actually there for years, like, a number of years. I think we jump ahead at this point to, like, 1930. We jump ahead to like 1930 at this point, so like, you know, we have this whole revelation, and then we were jumping ahead in time again, and this is when unfortunately like Sophia has her whole arc that she has to deal with.
So she's out, also heartbreaking.
Yeah, she's out with her kids getting ice cream, and the mayor's
and
wife
there too.
Yes, and she's with them as well with the husband and everything. Yeah, they're all out getting ice cream, and she runs into the mayor's the mayor of the town and his wife. They're white, just for context, because it means something. Who, of course, the wife starts being like, oh, like, you know, like, oh, your children are so clean and so well-behaved. And she's just like, yeah, great, thanks, because we're all, like disgusting
again,
barbarians,
don't forget,
I guess.
This is Sophia, who is, like, working real hard to
not
bite
to
her
say anything
at this point.
And so she's like, yeah, thanks. And the woman's like, oh, you should come be my maid, because, of course, I take a look at your children. I'm sure that means that you could do that. And she's like, no, thank you.
Yeah.
And then this woman makes unpleasant comments about, like, you know, like, I'm basically like, I'm really nice to black people, everybody says so. It's so gross.
It's so condescending. It's so nasty.
Oh, it's, and so gross.
This is one of the very few moments in this movie where there's like an interaction, like where there are like white people in the scene.
Yeah, there's
an interaction.
This might be the only time, honestly.
Aside from the mailman, I think.
Yeah, and that's it.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's it.
I'm not laughing because it's funny. I'm laughing because it's uncomfortable.
It's just awful. And then she keeps asking her. And then at one point, Sophia, turns around and says, hell no.
No.
I do not want to be
also,
your maid.
Also, that hell no song is my favorite song in the movie.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah, she tells her hell no. That's like Sophia's like signature, like, catchphrase. Yes. Is hell no. And
the mayor, over
the mayor
hears
gets
this.
Mad. He comes over.
Oh, God.
And then Sophia punches the mayor in the face.
Yeah.
And then she starts shouting over to her husband and to Celie, get my children out of
here.
Yeah,
take the kids away. Don't let them see this. Don't let them see this.
Don't let them see this. And then sure enough, she gets arrested.
Yeah.
And she gets put in a cell. And then it's kind of a little confusing about, like, how long, like, how much time has passed. But we're then shown, you know, Sophia basically broken. Her spirit is broken. She's in this cell. And Celie is visiting her. And she brings her Thanksgiving dinner. And we're led to understand that Celie has been visiting her every week when she's allowed to visit. And Sophia is not eating. She's not talking. She's just crying, and it's awful.
Oh, it's so sad.
It's awful.
It's so sad. Sophia is played by an actress named Danielle Brooks.
She was in Orange is the New Black.
Yeah, she was in Orange is the New Black. Yeah. And I believe, she received an Academy Award nomination for Best Supporting Actress.
And she deserved it because she was phenomenal in this movie.
Oh, so good.
And
so then we jump
6 years.
6 years. It's 1943 now, by the way.
Isn't it 1946?
No, that's at the end of the movie.
Oh, right, okay. So 1943, she's let out of prison. It's been 6 years that she's been in that cell.
And she's forced to go fucking work for the mayor's wife anyway as her maid. And it's so annoying.
It's disgusting. And then the mayor's wife is standing there going, like, don't worry, like, I'll get you, like, kind of where you need to be kind of thing.
Like, as a human being, and you're like, what?
And, like, again, Sophia's just, like, a shell of herself. Yeah. And Celie goes up to her and says, I knitted this for you, like a cardigan. And so I think we just kind of jump ahead a little bit again.
Yeah, well, we jump ahead. It's Easter. It's an Easter dinner, if I'm not mistaken. Yes. And this is a whole confrontation at the table. So everybody's there. It's been not too long, I think, that Sophia's back.
Yeah, because Sophia's been, like, let out now. So she's allowed. And it's fun because she's wearing the cardigan that Celie knitted for her.
It's so cute. They're all at the table. Shug is there. She's married to someone now as well. So she's there with her husband. Mister is there. Celie is there. Harpo is there with Sophia because you can tell
and
he's been
squeak.
Like, and squeak. Yeah. Because it's funny, but it's funny because you can tell that he's been making sure that Sophia is okay since she got out.
Well, also, the understanding was that while Sophia was in prison, Squeak and Harpo were looking after,
the kids,
all the kids.
I don't know where her husband went.
I had an explanation. No idea.
I feel like that was like
it was like a one-off line. Yeah.
I was actually really confused about that. That's something that I didn't get answered that I would almost have to like look up to check. I don't know where the hell her husband went. It was weird. Because she has had one or two children with him as well. So it's...
And he had four kids and then she had the kid with Harpo.
Oh my God, yeah.
So I think they had like six kids in total or seven kids or
something. Yeah, that's it. And Harpo and Squeak have been taking care of the kids.
Yeah,
so
that's
I don't
what
know
they
where
say.
This man went. He disappeared. No, I don't know. It's like maybe he fell to pieces after his wife was arrested and
I
then didn't want to deal with it.
They actually say that.
And he just like didn't deal with
Sorry,
it.
Sorry, they say that. They
Do
say
they?
Celie says it when she goes to visit Sophia.
Oh.
She says Harpo and Squeak have been looking after the kids because you're whatever her husband's name is, he has not been doing well since the incident.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Fine. So, okay, there we go. That's that explanation. So, yeah, so it's 1943, and that's it. So they're all sitting at the table, and this is just Celie's breaking point at this point. So she has an entire confrontation with Mister where she fully confronts him with regards to him having hidden all of Nettie's letters over the years. And she's like, get fucked, basically. Mm. Like, I'm not going to put up with any of this anymore. She nearly kills him at the table. She literally grabs her knife and is like about to kill him. And the others just stop her because they're like, it's not worth it. Don't do it because she'll be arrested and most likely killed.
Yeah. And I like what triggers this is because Shug and her husband, they got there earlier that afternoon. Mister didn't realize that Shug was married and so he's very angry and Shug says, well, we're gonna have to leave because we have to get back on the road and
Celie's coming with us. It's about time she saw something like outside of here. She's coming with us.
And then he's like, no, she's not. And then Celie just fucking
loses her mind at him and his father because his father also starts being like, control your woman. So that's like its own thing, but anyway, that's it. So she loses it and she does take off to Memphis with Shug and her husband and she moves in with them.
And also this kind of, so again, Sophia has been like a shell of herself up until this moment, but Celie says something to him like, you're just like horse shit that belongs in the ground.
And she starts laughing
and she just comes back to herself.
And she's just, and like, she says to Celie too, she's like, you are the person who took care of me and came to see me the entire time that I was in prison. She did for 6 years. She went to see her. I think every week she was saying she went to see her.
Yeah.
And she was like, you're incredible. I love you. And she was just like, ooh, things are going to change around here because I am back to myself.
I am back to myself. And you're like, woohoo.
Yeah, it's great. So then, so Celie takes off with Suge and her husband. They move to Memphis. She moves into their big, beautiful house that they have there. And then we jump ahead another 2 years into 1945 at that point, where they've obviously been, they've been basically thriving, like doing really well. You can even tell that Suge is doing really well because she has been able to, I think, kick her drinking habit to a degree. Because
and she's got like a record.
Yeah, she's like record being put out and stuff like that. And she basically dedicates it to Celie and like their friendship that they formed, which is really lovely too, because there's such a dichotomy of different types of women.
Yeah.
But I think that it works so incredibly well because, you know, Suge met Celie and immediately, I think, felt like a certain amount of like sisterhood and kinship towards her and wanting to help her in some way. And for Celie, Suge is so fascinating because she's so unlike any other person that she's ever come across in her life, and was willing to speak to her plainly and expose her to new things that she just never experienced before in her life. And I think that, you know, that was like an endless sort of source of fascination for her as well. So they form this really, they've just formed this really nice bond, which is great. So, in 1945, Celie's given the news that her father's passed away, and she's like, okay, so she goes to the funeral. I've never been
in
like,
their
Sophia,
small town in Georgia.
In their small, they go back to the town in Georgia. She goes to the funeral, and Suge and Sophia and everything go with her to support her. His wife, because it turns out he'd married sometime in this interim. It's been like 30 odd years, right? Mm-hmm. So he'd married at some point in this interim. His wife speaks to her at the funeral and is like, can you come and meet me at the shop, like the general store that he owned? And she's like, okay, sure. So she goes there after the funeral, and this is where the wife reveals to her, actually, the store was never his. Mm. He was not your father, your biological father. He was your stepfather. Your father passed away a number of years ago, and your mother remarried him. And when she passed away, even though the store was her, their biological father's, technically, and their mother's, their stepfather Alfonso, he just took over the store and kept running it, but basically pretended that it was his, but it was never in his name. And the deed automatically, upon technically both of their parents dying, so after their mom died, it should have transferred over to Celie and Nettie.
Yeah.
But of course Alfonso didn't let that happen because he wanted to, you know, keep everything for himself, and they wouldn't have known any better. They were young. They were babies. Well, they had no idea.
They were children.
Yeah. So his wife was actually very kind.
Yeah.
She's very nice. She's
but
like,
you can tell that she's been abused as well. And she was younger.
Oh my God. Yeah. Like, she was like, she was younger than Celie and everything. Yeah. I was like, ew, that's gross. Anyway, she, you know, gives her the deed and she's like, no, it's yours. She was like, you didn't know. Like, you had no idea. She's like, yeah, no, it's yours. The store is yours. He is not your biological father, which, you know, it doesn't make the sexual assault or the rapes or anything like any better. However, it makes it, when I was, you know, when you're watching it, it does make me feel better because I'm like, oh good, I'm really glad that these lovely children that she had are not the product of incest.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, but like also like if you think about like the mental toll that probably had on Celie, all
I can't
these
even
years,
imagine
like thinking that her father, like I don't even know if she thought about it that way, but like, yeah, like that would have had its own toll.
I feel like as she got older, she probably had a better understanding of it. And at that time, it probably was like, that must have been, I can't even imagine what that would be like to deal with. So that's insane. So she takes the general store and she decides, and this is another like sort of metaphor for like breaking free of like the bonds that she's had her entire life. So she turns it in to a, like a couture shop, basically.
But
or
they
like
make
a,
pants for women.
They make pants for women, and it's called Celie's Fancy Pants, and it's so cute.
It's so cute.
I love
and, like,
it.
All these women are now coming from like far and wide to buy
to
pants,
buy pants, and she's got all these
had to
women
wear skirts
and
stuff.
And she's got all these women employed there and everything, and it's so like lovely and lively and colorful because she's always in very muted tones all the time, like grays and browns and like these really sort of like very muted, very quiet colors. And then of course when she starts this business, she's in red and green and these beautiful bright colors.
There's even like these sparkly like pants.
Yeah, that's
well.
It
it's
exactly. While all of this is going going on. When she left Mr. several years ago, it was probably about 10 years ago, she did curse him, and she actually did, it turns out, because basically what she was saying was, until you do right by me, like, until you make things right with everything that you've done to me, everything that you think about, everything that you touch will turn to shit, basically.
It will crumble.
Yes.
And it did.
And it does, because the farm is, like, infested with insects, and it's falling apart and everything, so he's not able to make enough money. He spirals further down into, like, a drunken stupor for a period of time. Harpo kind of tries to help him, but you can also tell he maintains a distance because he's like, nah, bitch, nah.
Yeah, Harpo's like, I got enough to deal with Sophia and Squeak at this point.
Well, it's, like, weird. So I think that this point, it's pretty clear that he and Sophia have officially reconciled and are back together. Yeah, and I think
Squeak is just completely out of the picture now.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, she's around, but she's not, like, involved with him anymore. And I'm like, all right, whatever. If everybody's cool with it, that's fine. Totally. Anyway, so, you know, one night, and that's it, a drunken stupor, Mr., you know, is, like, out in one of his fields, which, again, has turned to total shit because of all of the infestations, and nothing can grow properly. So it's just this, you know, festering black pile at this point, because he's had to burn the crops several times.
Yeah.
He remembers Celie's curse, and he's like, I'm going to fix things. I'm going to do right by her. I'm going to fix this. And so it is actually a turning point for him. And it doesn't mean, like, you're going to love his character necessarily, although he is played by Colman Domingo, who's, like, a really good actor.
Yeah, he's
great. If you guys have ever seen Euphoria, there's an episode of Euphoria that was, like, between seasons 1 and 2, where it's basically just, like, a dialogue filled episode between him and Rue in, like, a diner. And it's mostly focused on him and his story.
Yeah.
It's incredible. It's really sad. So good. Yeah. God, it's good. He's so fucking good in that show. Anyway, he has, that's it, like, this moment of clarity. So he starts to clean up his act. What we realize, so she's like, you know, you, like, basically what she told him is, you need to do right by me. So he receives in the mail a letter from Nettie, who doesn't necessarily know where Celie is living at this point. She's still in Africa. She has no idea.
Yeah.
And the letter indicates that because of, that's it, like, British invasions and things like that, and all of the colonization that was taking place at that time, that
they're many in danger, of them,
they
were,
yeah, that's it, they had to leave the area and flee, and she was like, we're not going to have much of an option other than to come back to the States.
But you have to vouch for our citizenship.
Or we can't get
and
in.
She's like, you're our only hope. Like,
and she's saying this to Celie, like, she's writing to Celie.
But he's reading the letter, and so he decides, I'm going to do right by her.
I will fix it then. So he goes to the immigration office and asks, like, what can I do? You know, and the lawyer's like, he's like, even if you can vouch for them, like, it's going to cost several hundred dollars to bring them back here, which, keep in mind, it's 1945.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
Yeah. 1945, 1946 at this point. And so he's like, you know, at first he's like, okay, fine, thank you. But then he stops and he's like, I have land. If I sold some of my land, do you think I could get money for it? And the guy's like, yeah, absolutely. Like, that would go a long way to helping it. And so he does. He basically sponsors them to come back to the States. And by them, I mean Nettie and also Celie's two children, Olivia and Adam, and their kids.
Yeah.
At least one of them. I'm sorry.
I think Adam is married
and he has two children, I believe. Yeah. So she has grandchildren at this point. And he also goes to apologize to Celie. He buys sparkly pants, which made me laugh. and tries to reconcile with her. And she just says to him, she's like, let's you and I just be friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is fine. Good, cool. So now hop ahead to a little bit later, because you have to understand that at this time, travel would have been very slow. They would have come by boat, so it would have taken months for them to get back. Totally. So there's a whole big gathering in the community where they're having, like, a dinner and stuff like that. And then basically in that last scene, as a surprise, and you can tell other people know, like, yes, Mr. knew that this was happening because he was helping them come back, but, like, Suge knew, other people were aware. Yeah. Like, Sophia knew, other people knew that this was happening. A car shows up, and Nettie gets out of the car, and Adam and Olivia and Adam's wife and his two kids are all there, so they're all able to, like, reunite right at the end of the movie, and
they have this.
So it's one of those things where, so that's basically, like, how it ends. They have, like, a final song, everybody's able to, like, reunite, and, like, it's really nice too, because you can tell that Nettie never stopped talking to them about their mother, because when they, like, when they see her, they, like, hug her, and they're like, you know, we love you and everything. I'm like, oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it really goes to show that, like, Celie, even though in her perspective, like, you know, she was abused, she had this really awful life, but she brought so much to everyone else around her.
Yeah, that what were they going to do other than be, like, yeah. you know, talk about how wonderful she is, basically.
Right, and it's like she had this whole full life yeah. that she didn't even know about, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And it's just, it's really heartbreaking because you're like, she's, like, you're assuming that at this point, like, she's quite... She would be older. I don't even know how old she would be.
I don't know. At least
not that old.
Maybe
I
in
guess.
Her 40s or something.
40s, 50s, maybe.
40s or 50s, maybe. Yeah.
So she's not that old, but it's like she's lost all these years with her sister, with her children, but she never stopped talking about them as well. Like
no,
her
it's
whole
true.
Life, you
it's
know,
her,
it's like
Nettie like, and her kids, Nettie and her kids, Nettie and her kids. Yeah, it's yeah. true. It never really stops. So yeah, so they have this wonderful sort of full circle moment. And they're able to reconnect later in life, yes, but at least they're able to have like now a number of years with one another, which yeah. is really nice.
It
and
is.
That's kind of like how everything wraps up. I'm really surprised. I don't know if it was marketing. I don't know if it was the timing of the film. This film came out right around Christmas in 2023.
It was like a quiet release.
Yeah.
Like, what happened with it?
Yeah, no, it's considered basically it didn't make very much money and stuff. Even
I
though
hate
it
that.
Was, yeah, even though it was quite critically acclaimed, like critics said it was very good.
Yeah.
You know, it was like very well regarded when it was released. And it's really too bad. So, like, if you haven't watched it,
please
I would
watch
recommend.
It.
Yeah, like, because, like I said, it's quite long. So, we don't really have time to cover every aspect of it throughout yeah. the course of this. Like, there's no way we haven't touched on a lot of like the nuance and like the
yeah.
specific scenes and pieces of dialogue that are really great and everything,
and like also like the great interaction and the focus on the characters and how
yeah.
they interact with each other without having like this overarching like
yeah.
like other outside forces coming in.
Yeah, no.
You know, it's really about the characters and their lives and how
their
they
lives
with
and their
other.
Interaction. Yeah, no, it's true. There's so much less that's like touched upon, but it gives you like this wonderful, very, very like sort of, I don't know how to describe it, this like lovely story that's very focused on like these specific people mm-hmm. in their lives at this time period. And it's just like a really nice story. And on top of that, also, since we haven't really touched on it, the costumes are great. The songs are fantastic. The vocal performances are incredible.
Yeah, Fantasia Guarino plays Celie.
Plays
Celie. I don't think we mentioned
no,
that.
I don't think we mentioned that.
What's her name? Ariel.
Oh, yeah. Halle Bailey plays the young version of Nettie.
Yeah.
The younger version of Celie was really good as well. Like, mm-hmm. everybody was really great.
Yeah.
The, like, choreography is good. Like, everything.
The makeup
like,
is good.
Yeah.
The sets
like,
are great.
Visually, like, it's, like, a beautiful movie to watch. It's entertaining from start to finish. The songs are really great. So, yeah, it's just, like, it's just overall, it's, like, it's a very incredibly well-rounded film in terms of how good it is from
yeah.
start to finish. Like, the performances are good. Everything is good.
Go watch it.
Yeah. So if you haven't seen it, definitely go check it out. But if you have, you can let us know about that. And also, like, how it compares for you anyway, you know, to, like, a non-musical version. So, like, the original film and the novel and everything. You can let us know about that over on Instagram, Threads, and TikTok at FullyBookedCA. And you can also check out our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/book was way better. But until next week, guys, keep on reading.
Thanks, everyone.